Welcome to the Two Regular Teachers podcast. My name's Rick Kaler-Thompson.
And I'm Adam Lavaz, and welcome to episode 6. And Rick, this is a little bit of uncharted territory for us.
Well, it is uncharted territory, Adam, so much so that I almost struggled to start then, didn't I?
You did. The nerves definitely kicked in. I reckon it's just the hotel.
It is. And good segue there. We're actually doing our very first Skype long-distance recording of the podcast. I'm actually coming to you live, Adam, from about a 5-minute walk from Swinburne University, just outside Melbourne, in Hawthorne, and all ready for the DLTV conference tomorrow.
Yeah, and that sounds rather exciting, mate, to be up there.
It is exciting. I checked in a few hours ago and got settled in, had a bite to eat, and then just focused on episode 6. And
that's right.
Yeah, I tell you what, I must admit, I had a fairly smooth drive up, but I've got a little, just a little bit of information for you here, Adam. I had to drive through the Burnley Tunnel.
Yep.
The tunnel that goes under the Yarra River here in Melbourne,
yep.
And just as the you've driven through before, haven't you?
Oh, many times.
Yeah, and look, as I was going through, just as the road starts to dip down. So, which is the bit, I guess, where you're going right down underneath the river. This lone, quite large drop of water dropped onto the windscreen. And I just had a moment where I thought, have we got a leak here? You know? Do I need to floor it?
Yeah, did you need to floor it? Did the hands get a bit wobbly on the wheel?
Well, you know, the old mind started racing. The mind multiplied all these scenarios so quickly that I even thought of the old... pretty awful Sylvester Stallone film, Daylight, where they get stuck in a tunnel.
Classic movie, that one, too. Anytime I go through the tunnels these days, it's more about, well, looking out for those trucks. All you see in those tunnels is that grainy vision of some trucks, you know, swerving between, you know, lanes and that sort of stuff. That's all I'm worried about. Watching the rear view mirror, waiting for some truck to come straight up my backside.
It is. It's always quite... it is quite nerve-wracking, I must admit. But we've got a big episode for you, haven't we, Adam? Lots of topics and issues to peruse.
Yeah, particularly over the last week, hasn't there? There's been a lot of things come up in the papers about a variety of topics that we've been pretty keen to touch on. So, yeah. So as we said off the top, Rick, we're using Skype for the first time, which is a bit of uncharted territory for us. And the reason for that is that you're in Melbourne for the DLTV 2014 conference, and I know that I've heard about it recently and I'm really interested in it, and I kind of wish I had been able to go. I think the combination of camp this week and other elements didn't allow it, but I know you're pretty excited for it and some of the presentations that are going to be happening.
Yeah, thanks, Adam. I am really excited about it, and hopefully we can get you up here next year. It's sort of the inaugural digital learning and teaching conference. It's actually the combination of two conferences that used to happen in previous years, the VITA conference and the ICTEV conference.
Yeah.
If I've got anything wrong there, I'm sure I'll be corrected after we publish this podcast. But
be all over Twitter, mate. Be all over Twitter.
That's right. But really great networking opportunity for Victorian teachers and teachers from outside the state. I'm pretty excited about it. So it's over 2 days. It's tomorrow and Saturday, and there are loads of fantastic presenters and sessions. So many, in fact, that it's almost annoying that you can't get to them all.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a big day out, you know, when you've got you want to see four bands and two of them are on at the same time, and you've got to make a decision.
That's it. That's exactly right. Yeah. I think the powerful thing about these types of conferences that a lot of people will agree with is the networking opportunities that you get. But, you know, even though you can't be here, Adam, I think it's a good opportunity to mention that it will be worth following the hashtag DLTV2014.
I'll have to add that tomorrow and follow it, because, like I said, I'm really, really interested and curious as to what happens and some of the things that come out of it.
Yeah, for those people who listen, and there's probably not many of them, but if there are some people who are listening who aren't sure how to follow a hashtag, there's some great resources out there. We might even post one onto the blog about how hashtags work on Twitter and how you can follow them. And really,
yeah, that's a good idea.
Hashtags are probably the power of Twitter in terms of following what's going on in the world.
Mm. That's right. And so I know, Rick, you've mentioned a few to me already, some of the key presentations you're pretty keen for. What ones are those?
It was a tough choice, Adam. I must admit, I'm looking forward to trying to get into some sessions that target things that I'm not really trying out in my teaching at the moment, things that I've maybe been aware of for a little while, and things that I'd really like to try.
Because before you go there, man, I think that's terrific too, because you know, going to a conference like that, it'd be easy to play it safe. You know, go to something you already know about, you can contribute to, but it's kind of almost going out of the comfort zone.
Yeah, it is. So I'm catching a session about ICT student culture and connecting a community, because I want to learn some more ideas about getting students even more ownership over the ICT in the school and being leaders. Mm. I'm also going to see one about cyber safety and being cyber smart.
No, I was going to say, look, and that's again key after we discussed Edmodo a few weeks ago.
Yeah, absolutely. But the ones I'm pretty excited about, I'm going to see one about augmented reality and using Erasma, which is an app and program for the classroom. And Nathan Jones is presenting there, and I'm really excited about getting. I really want to experiment with augmented reality a little more.
Yeah, that's right. Now, Nathan Jones, that's not the Melbourne captain there, is it, leading that one tomorrow?
No, it's not that Nathan Jones.
Very cheap.
If Nathan Jones ever does listen to this, he is a Hawthorn supporter, I know, so he probably won't be happy with that.
Huge disappointment.
I'm also going to see my old colleague and mentor, John Pierce. He's presenting about coding, and he's got a great title. It's called Should Your Students Catch a Code?
That's the boom tish there.
It is, but really looking forward to that. Coding's certainly something that I think a lot of, particularly young boys, I think they're probably on the edge of being able to do that quite easily if they really sunk their teeth into it. So that's something I want to experiment with. And then the one probably that is the most interesting that I'm feeling lots of things about, I'm feeling excited, apprehensive, only mildly fearful, is there's a double stream called Gaming in Education, and it's been sort of coordinated by Kynan Robinson and a bunch of other educators from my PLN. And we'll post a blog post by Kynan into our blog, because what they're trying to do is break down the mould of how presentations happen at conferences, because that's what we're trying to do in schooling, aren't we? We're trying to break the mould of how we deliver lessons and how students learn. So.
Definitely.
So Kynan and the crew have devised two sessions around gaming and that principle. So apparently we'll be, there'll be lots of hands-on. We'll be trying to create things ourselves. One of the quotes from his blog post, he talks about knowledge doesn't just reside in an individual, or it doesn't reside in an individual at all. It actually resides in networks. And that's the whole idea of that the network will be open in this in this presentation. So I'm really, really excited about it. And he tried to dissect it in his post, and he's done a good job. So we'll post that in there for people to read.
Terrific, Rick. So look, it's going to be terrific tomorrow. I can already sense it. I'm not even there, and I'm almost excited myself to follow the hashtag. And I know next week we'll probably have a bit of a recap of some of the key ideas and thoughts that came out of it, and I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, sure am, Adam, and we'll definitely dissect some of them. So don't forget to follow the hashtag DLTV2014. Okay, Adam, so the next topic that I wanted to peruse with you is one that's actually hit the news this week again, and the headline that was in The Age on Monday, I believe, was Should Teachers Have to Pay for Their Work Laptops?
And you read that question, and I kind of had to read it three times when I saw it. I think it came up on Twitter, and you know, it's something that we, as teachers, we discuss every single week about these laptops, and it's really galvanised a lot of teachers, and everyone's had an opinion on it.
It has, and I don't know about you, but it was funny. When I first started teaching, as most of us, you're just trying to keep your head above water, and you're trying to just please and do all the right things. And I never thought about the fact that I was paying for my work laptop that I was told I had to have was or could be an issue. I just did it. But to give a quick overview for those people that who aren't sure about this issue, Victorian public education teachers have to pay, they sort of subsidise their work laptops that they're told they have to have. Mm. So you can basically lease a Lenovo laptop, can't you, for about four, I think it's gone up to $6 a fortnight now.
Yeah, it's something like that, and I think you can get the Apple Mac for, I think it's $11, and I think a Mac Pro for about $14.50. I think it's around that level.
And I know there's always been issues with which model of Mac you can actually get, and whether it is the latest model. I don't think it is.
Well, I can tell you that the last time I got mine 3 years ago, I actually looked at the Apples because I wanted one, and I decided against it because they were old. It was an old model. I thought, well, it's going to be done in a year or two. I don't want one of those. And to charge more was ridiculous.
Yeah. So, look, the Australian Education Union has taken the Department of Education to federal court, and the court case started this week. And basically the union's arguing that teachers should not have to pay for their laptops and that they should be completely subsidised by the department. What they're also asking for is a back pay to 2009 for all the tax that we've paid on these laptops. What do you think of that, Adam?
Well, it's interesting because I think they certainly have a point that we shouldn't have to pay for these. I mean, my first couple of years of teaching, I actually went and I had a laptop and I used that, so I didn't have to pay that. But, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, I started it, and you talk to anyone in any profession, you know, it gets subsidised. I mean, we need these to work, and to have to pay for it and to pay a higher amount, I think, is a lot to ask teachers. Now, whether or not we get that back pay, if that's asking for too much, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I think it's important that the education department understands that we as teachers need to be looked after more.
Well, I do find it hard to believe that they'll, I mean, if they win, which I think there is a chance of winning, but I'm not sure whether they will be able to get the back pay dated right back that far.
Yeah.
But it does, I just want to pull out a couple of things from the article. The education department deny that the pay deductions are unauthorised, or that laptops are actually needed by Victorian teachers, which I find that last point quite baffling.
Yeah.
Because
hugely baffling.
Because as we know, there is a lot of software that we need to use that we wouldn't otherwise purchase for our laptops.
Yep.
And we also know that even if we did want to purchase our laptops, which some people do, that a lot of the IT technicians that are sort of supplied through a lot of the contracts that the public schools have are very reluctant to upload all the stuff onto personal laptops.
Exactly right, exactly. And they should be, because apparently this pay is to help with that support, you know, to help things get on there and for these people to put it on there. And it doesn't really feel like it's being utilised like it should.
Absolutely. And I'm happy for any technicians out there who may listen at some stage to come back hard. But look, I've had experiences in my career so far where people who have come in with their own laptop or a Mac. Mac seem to have always been an issue with getting
it's a huge issue.
Programs on there, and
it doesn't make sense to me because they offer the Apple Mac, and but that's not compatible with so many other programs, and yet you're paying $10 more. It's never made sense to me.
Yeah, it's interesting. But also, the education department further argued that that they're providing the computers at a modest cost for teachers, and that they would be paying more if they bought them outright. But they also said that teachers have as much time, they can have as much personal time on these laptops as they want, and they think that's a fair argument. But, you know, I don't know if that really carries for me.
No, I don't think it does either. Not at all.
But, you know, as the there was a quote from a teacher at Kingsville Primary, Mick Weir, who said that, you know, there's no way to write a school report if you don't have a laptop, and there isn't. You know,
no, there is no way. And I mean, the days of writing it by hand, you know, you used to get them when we were kids, mate, back in the dark ages, just doesn't happen anymore. You can't do that.
That's right. And so being in the newspapers again this week, it did remind me of a fantastic blog post written by Richard Lambert, fantastic teacher, now assistant principal, who's in both our PLNs, and he sort of analysed the issue on his blog, and the post actually dates back to when it first hit the newspapers about the union taking the department to court. The post is from April 2013, and Rich talked about a few things. I don't know whether I'm not sure when you got your laptop, Adam, but did you ever work with anyone who got the Windows Vista desktop?
Yes, I saw a few of that, and laughable would be the word for it.
Yeah, absolutely torrid. I remember my poor colleague Andrew, who also played tennis with, you might remember him. He,
yes,
tell
I
you
do.
What, I can
yes,
remember him being extremely frustrated many times. But
I'm surprised some weren't smashed on walls, to be honest.
yeah, but look, I just want to touch back. I reread Rich's blog during the week, and he certainly wasn't just arguing, saying that that the department should subsidise every laptop for every teacher, because one, that is a hell of a lot of money. But his main point was that it's still pigeonholing. It's still saying, well, teachers have to use this one device. You've got one choice. And I'd just like to read a quote that, that he sort of worked his way to in the article. He said, "With these things considered, wouldn't the modern way to approach all of this be to provide teachers with a certain dollar amount that would subsidise the devices or device that best suit the specific needs they have that may be school or subjects specific?"
And yeah, I thought, brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
It's a bit like BYOT or BYOD, isn't it? That, you know,
yeah, it is.
If we're suggesting that students should be choosing the right tool for the job, maybe that's where this program could go. Teachers choosing their right tool for the job.
That's right. I think it also means that as teachers, we're not going to be left behind. You know, we look at the kids and we're continually giving them new things to use, and they're using new things. But we kind of have this archaic way of getting electronic devices and having to pay for them, that you're almost not going to be able to keep up with the students and give them the programs that they require, because we don't have the devices that we need to take that extra step.
That's right. And I know there are a lot of teachers that for one way or another maybe can't necessarily afford to buy their own personal computer, so a lot of their personal stuff has to go onto the work laptop. Now, I've been lucky enough to purchase a MacBook Pro earlier this year, so I've been able to sort of offload all those personal things like music and other documents and things onto my personal laptop, which has freed up the work laptop. But, you know, the amount of work that you do on these devices, they, you know, they do wear down.
Very quickly too. Look, I've had mine right now. The one I'm using even to Skype with you right now is pretty much around about 3 years old, and it has more bad moments than good.
Yes, very slow booting in the mornings, that's for sure. And the only reason, I mean, I've got a Lenovo, and the only reason I still go for the Lenovo really is because of the issues that we mentioned before with technicians, that I just think, well, if I get the Lenovo, I'm not going to have too many massive issues.
It's kind of the lesser of two evils, the Lenovo.
It is. So I'm sure people have got strong opinions on there, particularly Victorian teachers. If you have, we'd love to hear from you. If you've already been commenting on it, maybe take just one more moment and leave a comment in our discussion if you can. Okay, Adam, well, our next topic is one that I'm going to throw to you. We did mention last week briefly we were talking about Term 3 and about the extracurricular activities, and I think we'd like to take this a little bit further, and I'd like to hear your thoughts.
Well, as I said off the top, mate, I spent the last 3 days down at Anglesey on camp, and actually it's not my students' camp, so it was the 3-4 camp, and being a 5-6 teacher, as a male teacher, I went down to support and to be there, and it just reminded me, as I was away one night, just flicking through, catching up on Twitter, catching up on emails, as we talked about the PDP last week, it's another one of those disruptions to class time. One thing that came up for me was, you know, what they're looking for. The education department's looking for so much data and looking for us to do so much in that area. And I think, you know, already I've got a camp. I've got another camp at the end of term for my students that I have to go to. Yep. I'm looking forward to, I might add. But it really brought up for me that disruption in class. I mean, me even coming back today, my students are still ready to go, and I'm stuffed. Like, I'm running on petrol fumes almost after the last 3 days, and to try and deliver a quality program is so tough. But again, I've almost lost a whole week of time that I just can't get back.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. And I think, you know, we should clarify that this is not purely a whinge of how much work teachers have to do.
Oh, certainly not.
It's more, and it didn't sound like that, but it's more the fact that you're right, and it gets back to that rhythm that we were talking about last week, that if, you know, that classroom program, that quality classroom program that you're trying to deliver that you mentioned, you know, it's almost like you've got all these programs happening during a term, and not one of them really runs that smoothly because of the other program that starts or restarts here, like a camp or an athletics day, or maybe a run of days where there's incursions or
yes.
And then This particularly affects the one-on-one conferencing that I've mentioned in previous podcasts that I do with my students, because I have to record that for their reports. And
yes.
For example, tomorrow is the school athletics day. Now, I'll be at the conference, and obviously I would have been at the conference anyway, but I miss 2 hours of conferencing tomorrow, and it's very difficult to make that up. It's 2 hours
it
that
is.
I've lost, and I have to just catch however way I can.
Yeah, that's right. And as you said, to clarify, it's certainly not a whinge, but I think it comes back to, you know, the growing expectations of the modern day teacher, and that I think those disruptions to class time just simply aren't taken into account. That it's kind of, here's the expectation, here's what you need. We're not interested in how you get there, but you're going to get there one way or the other, or, you know, you're not going to go up a pay scale, or you're not going to get a good mark. And those disruptions just aren't taken into account.
Sure, absolutely, mate. And I think it's a really worthy issue. And I think it's one that maybe we might be able to come back to later in the term as the term progresses, because I've got my cadet next week, and I'm sure I'll be thinking like you are today.
Yeah, and look, I do want to say, though, just very quietly, that I did happen to live like a camp king down there this week. Had the room to myself with a nice ensuite. And,
oh, yeah, so you looked after
yourself. I got up, had a nice hot shower. Got up. I mean, it's the key thing is you've got to get up first and have the shower first to use up all the hot water. and kind of the kids have to kamikaze in and out of theirs, but I love camp though. I certainly don't want to point out that I'm whinging about going on camp. I love it. It's more just the growing expectations, you know, the new PDP, there's so much more going on. That term three, it's not a quiet term at all, and still a lot of hard work to be done.
Okay, story time, Adam. I've got something to share with you today, and I'm going to ask for your participation. And I guess the topic is bad decisions on the spur of the moment, or very odd things that you've done as a teacher, particularly in the early years when you were learning, you know, on the job, so to speak. You know, the stuff that they didn't teach you at uni.
Yeah, you're almost a grasshopper, aren't you? You're a grasshopper, and you're kind of looking around with bug eyes. It's sometimes you just do things you regret instantly.
Absolutely. And so I'm going to open with this one. In my very first year of teaching, way back in 2006, I had a parent that was just wanting to communicate about, I think it was a friendship issue with their child. And me trying to be like, you know, really good with parents and doing the right thing and making sure I was on call just about all the time, I said, yep, no worries, and I proceeded to put my mobile phone number, personal one, into the student's diary. Now, I sent the diary home for the weekend.
Oh, no.
Now, it didn't. I didn't get a call, luckily, on the weekend, but after work, I remember on that particular day, I'm pretty sure it was a Friday, I said to my colleague who was working next door, who was also my mentor, what I'd done, and she said, you don't put your personal number in a school diary. You put the school number in there. Like, what are you thinking? But you know what? I did this pathetic thing on the Monday. I remember grabbing this girl's diary while they were out at lunch and really, really, as hard as I could, colouring in over the top of my phone number. I actually crossed it out in deep blue.
Oh, no.
Thinking that, you know, they'd go, oh, yeah, it's not there anymore. But like...
Yeah.
They would have seen that crossed out. And gone, oh, he's crossed out his number, you know.
And they would have seen it over the weekend. That's hilarious, because you almost panic, don't you? You're going, what's the quickest, easiest way I can get myself out of this? And you don't think straight.
No, you don't. And there are a couple of ways. You know those decisions you make on a whim.
Yeah, you do. And look, it's funny you bring that up, because where I currently am now, I think you want to impress, don't you? In the school I'm currently at, way back, this is back in 2010, I did the same thing for a camp, though, you know, a bit of a camp, and actually asked for it to be deleted, you know, once the camp had been done, you know, to delete it, and they didn't. And and copped a few calls during the year, and inopportune moments, and actually had to go higher up to get this... you know, finished. I had to go to the print and just explain the situation. And you walk out of there feeling like, you know, the dumbest person on the planet.
Oh, you do. Look, and I've got another one for you that's not related. But this actually happened within the last 2 years. Now, the school I'm currently working at has a gigantic hill running along the oval side of, yep. of the school. And a lot of times kids' footballs and soccer balls will head out onto the road. Now, it's not a main busy road. It's quite a very quiet suburban road, but you should see this dip. It yeah. is steep. And you yeah. can imagine, a football is not too bad because it's got that weird sort of bounce. But
yes.
And by football, I mean like an Aussie rules football. But
yep.
a soccer ball just rolls and rolls and rolls.
Go forever.
And even though I've been working in the job nearly 9 years, it happened a few months back. And I panicked and thought, because it was a student's ball. It wasn't the school ball. And so I was on yard duty, the only one. And yet I decided to take off. Yep. down, off, I went out of the school grounds and all the kids could see me. And I had these, you know, black dress shoes on. I had slacks on and a shirt. And I'm there running like a chicken with its head cut off down the footpath, bouncing up and down. The weirdest running style. I would look like an ostrich that's limping, you know. I don't know. And I couldn't find it. The ball had taken off. I don't know where it went. And I got back and I thought, hang on, what if a kid had fallen over and busted their leg or something worse while I was gone? I thought that was probably the wrong decision. But it's funny how you just make these calls sometimes.
It is. It's almost panic. And I know we don't want to talk for too long about this. This is great, though. But the other one I want to share to go with that, because obviously mentioning the sport and... you would talk about this in depth of my white line fever playing any sort of sport. We might come back to that another day, but this day, I think it was last year, sort of, and I deserved it really, but playing a bit of tennis with the kids, you know, I was hitting it back and forth with my 5-6s and the ball sort of sat up and I've gone whack, straight down the line, and the way we were playing, it was sort of the king, so you're up the top end, and so I came in and whacked this big one down the line and sort of tried to run past and give the kid a bit and... slipped and fell in mud. And I tell you what, I deserved it. I was running around behind the pole, slipped down, and went like a sack of potatoes. And I think about 10 boys went up in laughter. And I remember getting up very sheepishly and going, yeah, I deserve that.
I guess my question would be, Adam, did your team leader or your principal send you into the boys' toilets to wipe the mud off yourself?
No, I didn't. But I had to sort of walk with a bit of a funny limp to hide it every time the principal walked by. There's nothing wrong with my jeans. What are you talking about?
No. Fantastic stuff. Anyway, if you've got a, we've all got those embarrassing sort of moments where you make split decisions, and it's sort of good to know that we still do them even when we are experienced.
That's right. So, Rick, that just about wraps it up for episode 6 this week. It's been an absolute pleasure Skyping. It's been terrific that it's actually worked, and we're looking forward to the DLTV 2014 conference tomorrow. I know it's going to be a ripper, and we'd love to hear some feedback during the day. So, again, guys, thanks so much for listening. I'm Adam Lavaz.
And I'm Rick Kayla Thompson, and we've been Two Regular Teachers.